Hey everyone, it's Simi Shaw, and welcome to Trailblazers. On this podcast, I dive deep into the journeys of trailblazing South Asians, sharing the stories of the leaders and dreamers lighting the way across the South Asian diaspora. Before we get to today's episode, I have an exciting announcement. We're partnering with the National Women's Hall of Fame to encourage the nominations of trailblazing South Asian women for induction into the hall. They are the nation's first and oldest nonprofit organization dedicated to honoring the achievements of distinguished American women. And our hope is to increase representation of trailblazing South Asian women in this consequential forum. So head to womenofthehall.org and submit your nominations today. Now, to kick off our season, I am so thrilled to welcome Bile Gadakia. Bile, in case you don't already know her, is the founder of ClassPass, a subscription-based platform that enables people to book a variety of fitness classes without paying for individual memberships. After officially founding the company in 2013, Bile served as CEO until 2017, at which point she became executive chairman. By 2020, ClassPass had become the first unicorn of the decade, and in late 2021, the company was acquired by Mindbody. Prior to founding ClassPass, Bile worked as a consultant at Bain & Company and spent some time at the Warner Music Group. She continues to serve as founder and artistic director of Sa Dance Company, a contemporary Indian dance troupe that has performed at Hallmark venues, including the Lincoln Center. Bile holds a degree in economics and operations research from MIT, and she has long been an inspiration of mine, which is why I'm so thrilled to welcome her to Trailblazers. Welcome, Bile.
Thanks so much for having me, Simi. I really appreciate you taking the time to share these stories and inspire, hopefully, a whole other generation of women, especially Indian women.
Oh, I appreciate that a ton. So I really want to start at the beginning of ClassPass, which takes me back to the 3 years you spent at Bain, and then you went and joined Warner Music Group in 2008, so you could spend a little bit of time on your passion for dance. And then one day, you decide to give yourself 2 weeks to come up with an idea for a company. What prompted that?
So I have been dancing since I was 3 years old. And I think, like most Indian girls, it's something we did when we were younger. It is something that gave us this unbelievable fun activity during college. And it was obviously like this hobby and passion of mine. But it was deeper for me. Like, I was trained in various forms of Indian classical and traditional dance. And I felt like I was really good at it. Like, it wasn't even something that, okay, I just did it on the weekends and stuff. I performed at every family function. I loved it deeply. And so as I got older, I think for me, it really became about how do I hang on to this thing? I was taking classes on the side always. I think people don't know for dancers is, you know, you really have to actually train daily in order to really keep your physical and honestly mental physicality and structure in the best shape possible. And so at that time I had my dance company and I was dancing as much as I could, but I was also training in ballet. And so that day I decided that I would take a different class because I just was at that point where I'd been with my same teacher for about a year and I thought I would try something new. And I ended up on the internet with a bunch of tabs open and it just seemed like an obvious problem to solve for me, especially because I was so passionate about keeping something I loved like dance that was mine in my life, but I knew other people had other activities that they had given up in their life, whether it was music or being athletes in college, like all these things that I felt like made people feel so centered and whole were things that we no longer looked forward to because we had to have jobs and get promotions and get married and just this long list of check marks that took away this heart and passion. So that was sort of the moment where everything started.
And so why 2 weeks? I mean, why did you give yourself such a tight timeline to come up with an idea for a company?
So I knew I needed to move forward in my career. Like, I was at that point where my current job wasn't the right one. And I had been building my dance company, but I also knew like I wasn't at the point where I was going to scale that either. So I knew I needed to make a shift and I didn't want to waste too much time in sort of thinking of this crazy idea. I had actually gone out to San Francisco to visit one of my friends, Parul. She worked at Bain with me. And I went to visit her. And at that point, this is 2010, right? The word entrepreneurship is not something that people are familiar with. It's not something that people think is even like a career path, especially in New York City. But in San Francisco, it was a very different story. Everyone was building apps and ideas. And I was so inspired by that. It felt kind of risky, but I was like, hey, why don't I give myself 2 weeks to see if this is sort of an environment I can thrive in? Is there a problem in the world I wanted to solve? And actually, it's funny because we'll go back to that later, but the whole problem in the world I want to solve is actually a really important part of this whole journey, I think, for me and for any entrepreneur. But I think for me, I was like, what could I solve in the world with my creativity, with my passion, my leadership? What is out there? And if I didn't think of something in 2 weeks, then it was time to maybe find other career options. Wow. And sort of think of other ways to move around in the music industry I was in or in the arts world. But that was really the reason I gave myself that deadline.
Yeah. And so before there was ClassPass, there was Classtivity and Passport. Can you talk a little bit about how you got started and walk me through the evolution to ClassPass?
Yeah. It's always so funny when people bring up these names now because they feel so foreign to so much of my own company, but obviously at the time they were such important parts of the process. Yeah, so when we started, I literally took inspiration from OpenTable, right? It seemed obvious to build an OpenTable for classes. Our first name was actually Dabble Now. It wasn't even Classtivity. Most people don't even know that, but I had to let go of that because someone else launched a class marketplace in Chicago called Dabble. And so I had to like change my name overnight and we changed it to Classtivity. Which is a mouthful and no one ever saw it, right? But outside of that, we first launched a product, which was a search engine. It took about a year to build. Basically, like we were scraping information. We were trying to get a bunch of data into one place that would have every single class like listed in Manhattan in one place, right? So you could go on and say, I'm looking for yoga in Chelsea at 6 p.m. And we would have all the classes sort of listed. Whether you could buy them or not, we were just really trying to build this directory of classes. And that was step one of the process. We had actually raised, I think at that point, over $500,000. We were just about to get into Techstars, which was an amazing incubator that still exists today. At that time, there was only like 2 classes, right? It was only in Silicon Valley. And we were, I think, a part of the second New York class that ever existed for Techstars in New York City. So it was, like I said, this was all very, very, you know, nascent. And it was New York was sort of finding its like tech roots too. And so we got into this program and I just felt like we were succeeding. It was sort of this like obvious thing for me where I was like, okay, like I got everything ready. I got to raise money. I built a website, all of it. And of course we launch at the end of Techstars on demo day. And it was one of those moments where I feel like everything went silent for me and my heart fell because no one was using the product. And I think as an entrepreneur, you have all this momentum, all this energy, you get so excited about launch, right? And you put so much into it and it is so hard when it doesn't work. And this wasn't even like kind of not working, it was just not working. Like it was like crickets, right? Like zero reservations, no one booking any classes. And even though we'd emailed, you know, 10,000 different emails for people to use the directory to go find classes, there was nothing going on. And I was building a marketplace and the actual only thing that mattered was for someone to book a class, right? And someone to actually transact on my marketplace. So I was not succeeding like OpenTable. That was definitely not what was going on. And I was also trying to raise some capital at the time. So I remember I went out to Silicon Valley and I was trying to raise capital. And I think we ended up raising a little bit of money around that time because we had had the momentum of Techstars. So thankfully, like some of that. And I think, you know, for any entrepreneur, like if you can build momentum and a little bit of the credibility, it always helps for people to sort of take that bet on you. And at that time, they were still betting on me and an idea, even though I knew inside like the product wasn't working at all. And so it was a really tough summer. I always call it the summer of buttons because we were just trying to like figure out if maybe it should be like a red button versus a yellow button. And is it big enough? Can people see the buy button? But we were completely off. And I think eventually I kind of really realized that we needed to move a different direction. And so after about 2 months of that, which is actually too long, and if I could rewrite it, I would be like, oh my God, why didn't I like change it so much quicker? But you don't know that until you look kind of backwards. But I remember getting the momentum to say, okay, we're going to try something new. And the team and I started doing a bit more research on classes, and we started seeing this huge new wave of boutique fitness studios opening. many of them were offering this like free complimentary class, right, to new customers. So it seemed sort of obvious, let's go package those up and build a website that would get everyone to sort of try classes for a month, and people could go and around and try yoga class, dance class, spin class, and it would work and help to bring new customers to so many of these studios that were opening up. And so we packaged this all together. This time we launched the product in like a month. We were not going to waste time building all this technology, doing all this branding or launching. And we started putting this product up. I remember we launched it on Thanksgiving and people started buying it. And it was so cool because I remember as a founder, when you start having people going to class, and like that was my only mission. And by the way, we are now close to 2 years into this journey for me. I remember when people started going to class, it just felt so incredible to actually feel like we were making a difference and having people going and trying all these new studios. So that was product two. It was called Passport. And then eventually we realized that the Passport wasn't converting and helping people actually go and like book classes at these studios long term. And then many of them were actually trying to buy this product over and over again, and they were signing up with fake emails.
Free emails, which, yes.
Yeah, exactly. Which isn't like a terrible thing, but yes, it was, because it was like not the contract we had with our partners. And obviously then we weren't also getting paid enough to pay our partners. So I knew that that was going to break down eventually. And so this one was the tougher one because it wasn't a very clear pivot. It's almost easier when like nothing's working for everyone to be like, we need to move. This one was harder because the Passport was bringing in reservations. We had great revenue. We actually had 100% profit on the product because it was free classes. So it like felt right if you looked at it from an economic perspective, but from a long-term business perspective, partnership perspective, it was wrong. And we ended up realizing, because people were doing the repeat, frauding us and buying the product over and over again, we realized that actually they wanted to keep using this. And we did some more research, and 95% of people said that they wanted to buy this product over and over again. And that's when we launched as a subscription. And by the way, we were still not called ClassPass at the time. We were called Classtivity. And when we launched that product, it was called the Classtivity ClassPass. And we were that for about 7 to 8 months before we actually killed the Classtivity part of it and just became ClassPass.
Oh my gosh. That reminds me of the Facebook moment, of course, in the movie where someone says, drop the. It's just drop the Classtivity and keep it ClassPass.
Actually, I have a funny story of that. Like one of my advisors during that time, this was about 3 months after we had launched ClassPass, and the sales of ClassPass and the organic virality of it was just so incredible that in 3 months it totally surpassed the Passport sales, and it was 100% the right way to go. And I remember having a meeting with one of my advisors, and he was like, you have to get rid of the Passport. It's like cracked, you guys. And I was like, we will eventually. And he said, he's like, it'll be a chapter in your book one day. You have to let it go. Wow. And we just couldn't, because we were like, oh, well, what if people want to try the Passport and then do ClassPass? And we were kind of stuck in this like conversation of let's keep both. Maybe they're different customers. And we very quickly realized you cannot have multiple products out when you're like a 6-person team. But he's absolutely right. You know, I always think about this, but in the halls of our company, like I always remember like an engineer will come by and be like, hey, like I saw this word in the database that said Passport reservations. What is that? And you're like, oh my God, it's like a different lifetime.
That's so funny. I love that. It's super interesting to hear you talk about the signaling value of things like Techstars and the art of the pivot, because I think a lot of people feel that it's a pretty obvious turning point when you know you need to pivot, but it sounds like that wasn't the case. So I feel like having that sort of business savvy and acumen to recognize when something isn't going to be sustainable is important.
Absolutely. And I think what it came down to, which I was referencing earlier, is I hadn't solved my problem I set out to, which was getting people to class. So no matter how much money could be coming in or people on my website, I always ask founders this, like when they're building something, because they'll be like, oh, I have this many active monthly users. I'm like, great, but what are they doing? Yeah. What matters is what is actually happening, and are they doing what you want them to, and make that your metric. And I think for me, it took me a long time to realize that the reservations was the number one metric, because that was the heartbeat of the company. It means a customer is happy. It means a partner is happy. It means there's engagement. So someone's going to further subscribe to the product, right? And without that, we weren't doing anything to even accomplish the mission. But ultimately, yeah, like it really does come down to feeling that, hey, did I solve this mission or not? And I'll never forget those few emails I started receiving once we launched ClassPass from customers saying that this product truly changed their lives. And in a way, I could hear in their voice, it gave them what dance was to me. And that's when I knew I had struck gold. People always like, you want to create magic in the world? A great product will sell itself. And that's what ClassPass did, because we created magic.
Yeah.
And like, honestly, we didn't even need to sell it because people were just hooked on it. And they were telling all their friends to do it. And it became more of, for us, like, how do we just get more and more studios so we have enough classes? Because, you know, there were points even in our product. I remember we had this 12 noon booking window for a while in the beginning because we wanted to keep it fair, right? About when classes would open up. And our site for like this 1 week would crash every day at noon because everyone would come rushing to the platform.
It's a good problem to have.
Exactly. I talk about that in my book too, right? I talk about champagne problems because that's really what it was. And obviously we fixed it, but I was like, we had too many people rushing on to book classes at 12 noon. And eventually we spread out the times, but it was always like these interesting problems that you have to solve. But like you said, they're great problems to have to solve.
Yeah, of course. So it sounds like you effectively failed a couple of times, at least twice, before getting it right.
Many times, many times.
What convinced you that there was still something there to keep going?
Mission and a deep why. I felt so passionate about the journey I had set out on to solve this problem for people, to get people to live their passions again, to go to class. I wasn't going to stop until I felt like there was no solution I hadn't explored. And I hadn't. I had just tried a few ideas. And I think you realize over time that this is about throwing darts. And sometimes you get closer to it and you got to learn from it to be like, okay, I was completely in the wrong direction. And you know, that's something I always learned from the search engine. Like, it's too many brain cycles for people to look for a class, try and buy the class, get over their fear of trying a new class. Like, those were too many things to put in one moment. How do you change around the behavioral psychology of a product to help people get through moments like that? And I think those are all things that you learn in the process of failing. And sometimes you just have to fail. We wouldn't have learned that people wanted a subscription if, in a weird way, we never did the passport, right? And I don't consider the passport failure at all, because it actually was the leading indicator to tell us that discovery and this idea of variety was the magic that people really wanted in fitness. And that was what was missing. It's really about what you can learn from it. And I think if you learn to take failure in that way, and like I said, move quickly, right? Don't stay in it. And I have learned to do that many times over. I think as a company, and we've made several changes, I think, over the history, even after ClassPass, whether it was pricing and the product model and all of that. And I think we just realized that we have to do things that are obviously aligned to our true north and keep moving forward. We can't just sit there and wait for someone else to make a decision for us.
Absolutely. Super, super interesting. I want to backtrack a little bit because it sounds like so much of the learning opportunity came from iterating over and over again. But I'm curious, when you first had this idea, how did you get started? So much of what I hear about when I talk to my peers today is, I have this idea, now what?
Great question. I worked at Bain, so I feel like my number one thing is always like research, like get in there and start learning. And so my first like thing was, how do I just get smart, right? So I did everything I could to learn about comparable business models, whether that be like OpenTable, SeamlessWeb, ZocDoc. That was sort of like step one, get smart on the industry, start doing some market research. So I did like a survey with a bunch of my friends on what classes they take, what do they not take, what do they want to take. So I just kind of started with that, doing more of like the primary and secondary research. The next thing I did was, I was talking to my friends a ton about it because it was like on my mind. And I'm one of those people, when I'm passionate about something, I can't stop talking about it. And everyone knows that. But I do it in a way that I feel like people are interested in it. And therefore, I got some of my friends interested in it. And so they wanted to start writing me checks. So I kind of started raising capital even before even trying to raise capital, because I was just talking about it all the time with my friends. And I remember being at brunch with one of my banker friends, and he was like, here's $10,000. And I was like, I don't even have the company set up. And he was like, I believe you can do it, right? So that was step two, is this idea of just talking about it, raising capital organically through friends and family. And then the third one, which I think is really important, is setting up a team, right? And that for me was one of my friends who, once again, I was just talking to about the idea. He just got so obsessed with the idea where he was like, I just have to help you. And at that time, entrepreneurship wasn't, like I said, as big of a thing. So a lot of people were kind of also helping me on the side. So they had their day jobs and then they'd give me any hour they could. You know, this is, some of it was before I had even quit. And once I quit, then I had a few other people who were like, I'm going to come and do this full time with you.
Wow.
But it was really about building a team. And I think in the beginning, when you think about team, it's really about finding generalists who are honestly as passionate about the idea as you are. You just have to figure it out in the beginning. And that's how we really started this.
That's super helpful insight. And I feel like not something that we get enough of, tactically speaking. You touched on the fact that you quit your job. And I remember listening to you when you were speaking with Guy Raz, talking about how your mom encouraged you to quit your job. Did that take you by surprise coming from an Indian immigrant family?
Yeah. I mean, I feel like that conversation that I had with her was 10 years in the making. I couldn't believe we had gotten there at that point, but I'm really glad we did.
Yeah.
I talk a lot about this also in the book, is that I have learned to bring my parents, especially, and I think for anyone, whether you have anyone in your life who just might have different expectations of you or just more conservative thoughts, just because of, once again, I never blame my parents for this, but I get it. They gave up everything for me and my sister to come to a different country. I 100% respect and value it, always want to make them proud. But at the same time, I wanted to make them proud and also take leaps in my life. So I learned through my whole journey, whether it was MIT, dance, Spain, was to like celebrate everything and share it with them, almost overshare everything. So they were bought into my success and they were bought into my own capabilities. And so I think by the time I got to that point where I was like, I really don't like my job. I don't know what I want to do. I have this idea. And my mom was the one who was like, well, why don't you quit? I think she just at that point was like, beta, like I can say that. She's just like, you have succeeded in everything you put your mind to in your life, go for it. And I needed that because I did always feel like a sense of, I have to make my parents proud. What Indian child doesn't? And so I think having her say that to me meant a lot. And I think it gave me the wings I needed to quit the month after.
That's absolutely incredible. And it resonates a ton because I went through a different experience. It was less of an idea and more just me not being in the industry I wanted to be in, working in private equity. And my parents, after a bit of time, had a very similar reaction. And it's just, I felt like I was grappling with it at a certain point more than they were. And it's just fascinating how Right. It's just, it's so ingrained into us from a young age to follow a structured path, make them proud. And here they are like cheering you on without you even realizing it.
Absolutely. I think they've been through a lot. And at the end of the day, I think they also want us to be happy. You know, I think they realize that they did a good job. Sometimes, like, I just want to tell my parents that you did good.
Maybe they'll listen to this podcast and hear it.
Yeah, exactly.
So I want to fast forward a bit. In 2017, you built this incredible company that is ClassPass, and you transitioned out of the role of CEO into the role of executive chairman. Was that a hard decision? What prompted that move?
I think for me, when I started this journey, I had never started it to be a CEO. Like I said, I started it to solve a problem. It's funny because by the time 2017 came around, there was like such an emphasis on like female founders and being CEOs and the title and all of that. And it was funny, right? Because I started this in 2010. So I just felt like my journey started so differently. And I always knew, like, I'm a creative and I'm an artist as much as I am a businesswoman and leader. And honestly, it's really hard to be both and be kind of confined into a role and a title. And it just, at some point, it just wasn't working for me. Like, I just felt like I was showing up every day to do so many things I didn't want to do because I carried this title. And I needed to like really unleash myself from that. And it was hard. I would say the hardest part about it was what people were going to think. And that's why, like, I've never, ever made decisions in my life based on what other people were going to think of me. But I knew that was going to be the hardest thing that I was going to have to grapple with, is people being like, why did she do that? And hey, like, what does this mean? And I honestly, I never wanted any other woman in their world to ever think that they couldn't be a CEO, right? Like, that was never, ever the story I wanted to project. But it didn't feel authentic to me and who I was.
Yeah. I feel like that speaks so much to the burden that women bear today of, I've become a role model, and suddenly if I leave or choose to do something else, I'm becoming one less person for people to look up to, which is completely ridiculous, but totally has become the narrative.
Oh, I mean, I'll take that to another level, which is, even there were times where I felt wrong about dancing. I was like, Oh no, am I going to be judged for being an artist and a dancer, being in the tech world? But I really learned to overcome that by surrounding myself with the right people. All my investors have seen me dance and they love it. And they are like completely into what I have built and into supporting me because of that. But it took me a really long time to feel that freedom to do it, right? And I think you're absolutely right. I think it was this idea of, because I all of a sudden became this role model where I was like, wait, but do I stay in this and something I don't want to do because I'm that? No, like the best role model I can be is living the life I want to be living. Absolutely. And keep making changes. And I've constantly made changes like over and over again in my career. And they're usually very controversial decisions, but I think that's what's always kept me going is because I stay very true to me, not true to what other people want me to do.
Absolutely. And I'm here for it. I'll tell you that. You touched on the fact that all your investors have seen you dance, which I was reading about that, and I think it's amazing. Raising money is its own challenge, especially when you don't look like every other founder in Silicon Valley. And you've talked about how in your youth you had this duality of identity as an Indian American, but struggled with it and kept them quite separate for a time. In showing your culture this way with your investors, it's a bold way to fuse the two. When did you finally start to come to terms with who you are, and how did you navigate those challenges, if any, when you were raising money?
Because you even mentioned it. Yeah, this whole duality and not feeling like I could fully be me. And it was a duality between being American Indian. And in this way, it was also a duality between being an artist and a businesswoman, yeah. Right? Like they just always felt like they belonged in their own boxes and not together. And I think at some point, for me, like that journey, I think started happening in college where I just started feeling really comfortable in my skin. And a lot of it came from dancing, which is why I once again, I'm such a proponent of people keeping their passions in their life, because I found this place where I felt so authentically me, and I felt beautiful as a woman. I felt beautiful as an Indian woman. I felt beautiful as an artist. It just brought everything together where I was like, if someone wants to see me shine, right? And we always know when we say the word like be in your element, I knew when I was on stage, I was in my element, right? And so I could go into a meeting and be amazing and tell a story. I will do that. But when I'm on stage, I know I go to a total different level. And I knew that was part of the magic I wanted my investor to see, because I don't know anyone who's seen anyone in their element and been like, oh, I wouldn't invest in that person, right? Like if you saw like, when you see like LeBron James doing his thing, you're like, oh my God, yeah. Right? So it's almost like I wanted them to see me in my element. And that's, you know, and it was obviously very connected to the why of the company. So that's really how I came to it. But obviously there were many times in the journey where I had no's and I didn't feel comfortable doing that. I mean, I worked at Bain and showed up every day in a suit and all of that. And I felt uncomfortable. And there were times in this journey where in my first few investor meetings where I felt like I had to come in being that finance girl, and it wasn't me. I felt like I was speaking like a robot, and eventually I just learned to be myself. Part of that happens when the story of the product changed and people started using it. I was like, all of me, and I talk about this too, like in identity in the book, is the threads of who I am, being this MIT girl, being an Indian woman, being someone who loved dance, all of those things put me in a unique position to solve this problem, right? And that was like a celebration of my identity, because I realized if I was any other composition, I may have never solved this problem of ClassPass. And that's how I really got over so much of needing to kind of deal with doubting myself or anything, because I'm like, these unique traits are what built this company.
Absolutely. Super, super interesting. I love the fact that you touched on how so much of your roots in terms of dance, your culture, set you up for the success that you've achieved today. You actually started SA Dance Company while you were at Warner Music, I believe. How did creating this dance troupe eventually impact the way you approached building a company like ClassPass?
Yeah, such a great question. And I think sometimes you need to start small before you go big, right? I needed to start somewhere. And being that time, I think I was, 20, maybe 4 years old when I started SA. I was this young girl in the middle of Manhattan, and I had dreams. And that's so many of us. And sometimes we just need to get started. And for me, that meant putting 10 girls in a rehearsal room and starting to create some work. And then the year after, putting a check down to get a theater and presenting a showcase and having 1,000 people come. But these were all baby steps in this process for me that helped me build confidence as a leader, right? I started to realize that, wow, like I can make a team and I can get people to move forward in a direction that I wanted. I think just being able to have that confidence in myself of being able to do that was an important part of this. And I think the other part of it was just pure execution. I didn't know how to do some of these things, especially when I was building SA. Like I didn't know, how was I going to get a theater and finding lighting director and a stage man? I didn't know any of that. It was not my world, but I figured it out. And I think that's what entrepreneurship really is. So that's when I was like, I'm going to build this open table like site, and I'm not an engineer and I haven't built something huge before and marketed it, but I felt the confidence of, I believe in myself to problem solve and figure it out. And I think that's really what everyone always needs. It's like, just start somewhere, right? And even if you need to plan a birthday party or plan an event, it's weird, right? Sometimes you just need to do something and be like, wow, I did a good job. Yeah. To be able to go and say, oh, I can do what I really want to do. And maybe like try a little harder and do another good job, right? It's like the sequence of events and the data that helps you build your own confidence the same way an investor believes in you.
Yeah, you just captured so much of the heart of this podcast and Trailblazers, broadly speaking, because I'm 24 years old. I have big dreams. I live in New York City. And I feel like a lot of the learnings that I have today are a product of Trailblazers that I've been able to take and apply to my daily life, my actual professional work. Building the team, building this platform has contributed so much to who I am as a holistic person. And it's so wonderful to hear someone who's done the things that you have and achieved the things that you have talk about how some of these smaller initiatives that we take on in our youth contribute to the leaders that we become and the companies and platforms we might build someday.
100%. And going as far back as being in a dance group when I was 4 years old taught me teamwork, even choreographing in college. I mean, these things always feel so small. But I'm like, no, I had to learn how to like coordinate 40 people in yep. different shapes and dances. And it shows you different skills of who you are. I think when you do it towards things you love, like it just makes it more enjoyable versus something you have to do. But absolutely, like I think everything in our resume and every activity we've done is a part of our skill set, teaching us foundational values for our future.
Definitely. So you've touched quite a bit on Open Table as serving as sort of the early inspiration for what became ClassPass. And you started building it around the time that Open Table hit a $1 billion valuation, that sort of being a North Star. How did it feel when you realized you would come full circle and become a unicorn yourself in 2020?
Oh my God, I remember that. And I was 8 months or 9 months. I was like close to having a baby. I was like literally weeks away from having wow. my first son. The part of it that I loved the most was that I knew it would inspire other people to take leaps in their lives as well. And I think that's so much of what I care to do, whether it's through my book or through sharing my story. I think so much of it has to do with getting people to realize that there are people who look like them, who dream like them, who brought up like them that have succeeded in the world. And so that was a really important part of it. When it comes down to the company though, it's funny, like I was never chasing a valuation. I
of course
100% still care about the fact that we processed over 100 million reservations. That to me is hours of people's lives that we've changed. And that to me is 100% the North Star and will always be the North Star. But like I said, I think it's about helping to change the narrative and making sure that people realize that different people can succeed and build amazing companies.
Yeah. I remember seeing the headline plastered practically everywhere. And it was a moment that I know a lot of people felt very seen in the South Asian community. So
that makes me very happy to hear.
That same year that you become a unicorn is also the same year COVID hits, which is an unfathomable headwind for a business. What did that moment feel like? Can you speak to the challenges the business faced and how you approached it?
Yeah, so it basically was March, right? Like of that year. Yeah. We had hit our $1 billion valuation in January, coming off like, you know, January, February is always like one of the best times of year for us. Obviously, everyone's yep. kind of getting back into it. And then COVID starts hitting. And within a 2 week period, literally 95% of our studios shut down completely around the globe. Okay. We're working now. And this, by the way, we are a global company, right? We're around, yeah. we were in 30 different countries by that point. So it was just this really scary moment. And we had thankfully just raised capital. So we weren't afraid like necessarily on our business, but what we knew we had to do was turn to make sure our studios were going to survive this. And I think as the months went on, this became less of obviously like a short-term fix and more of a long-term survival mode for our studios. So that became really top of mind. So we had done different things where people could live stream classes from their favorite studios. And play with them through credit. So we were trying to like help people continue to work out and give their partners and the studios that they love money. We had a resiliency fund. We were part of helping the government come up with initiatives to help these studios survive through all the studios and gyms. We also, from a customer standpoint, we froze everyone's accounts and we launched our video platform. Our heart and soul is obviously getting people to classes, you know, yeah. And that's why for us, it was like, it's just this interesting thing where we've been waiting, you know, and I think it's just a hard time because it's the not knowing when that's the hardest part of all of this. Do we know people are going to, you know, go back out and live life again? Yeah, like they will. It's just a matter of when, you know, and surviving that.
Yeah. Was there any particular mantra that just kept you going through this period?
It's funny, right? I think this idea of pivoting and resiliency is just such a big part of our DNA. Like the team flipped the entire app within literally a week, which was just so incredible. But I think it just goes back to the DNA of who we are, that we're going to get through this because we care enough and this is here for a short-term time. We're going to get to the other side. And when we do, people are going to need this more than ever.
Yeah.
And absolutely. I think that's really what kept us going. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So fast forward about a year, in late 2021, ClassPass gets acquired by Mindbody. Did you struggle with the decision to sell? I mean, is this the outcome you always envisioned?
You never know. As a founder, you build to build, and whatever these outcomes are, they vary, right? I think for us, and what's so interesting is like, I have met and worked with Mindbody since the day I built ClassPass. So when we were building that open table model, we were working with Mindbody. So these two companies have worked together for so long. I think both companies would say this was a matter of when, not if we were going to come together. I think it was just, we just didn't know when and in what situation. And I think with COVID happening, and like I said, going back to the mantra of protecting and helping so many of our studios, we knew that putting these companies together was the best way to actually help the entire industry as we get to the other side of this pandemic. Because like I said, we were going to always come together at some point or another because of the way we complemented each other's businesses. And so this helped put all of our energy into getting the industry up and running again. So that's, you know, really what it came down to. It's definitely hard. I think obviously like in that decision, I decided to obviously move on and move forward onto new projects. That was probably the harder part of it for me because I just realized that, you know, I've been working on this for literally a decade.
Yeah.
And I was just at a point where I was like, I also now, you know, I'm at a point where I'm like, where do I want to spend my time, my energy and my dreams, you know? And obviously, like, I will always love what I built at ClassPass and still, you know, I'm such an avid user. But at the same time, you know, you got to move on and keep moving forward and keep sort of ripping that Band-Aid over and over again.
Yeah. I thought it was really beautiful that you had actually met Mindbody's founder, Rick Stollmeyer, early on in the ClassPass journey. It's just so amazing how things come full circle.
It's funny because his wife saw me and my co-founder on the cover of Inc. magazine. And this is, by the way, before we had even a launch product, we were only on the cover of Inc. because we got into Techstars. I always like find it so coincidental. And his wife saw it and she was working at Mindbody. And she was like, hey, we should go and meet these guys. They're building something in the class space. And Rick was like, sure. So it was like such a random dinner meeting that happened literally back in 2012. And we just stayed in touch ever since then. And you never know like what can happen, you know, but you just always, like I said, like your reputation follows you, your work follows you and everything Absolutely. That you do. And obviously, yeah, it's great to be at a point where we are now when we're together.
Yeah. Something that's always stood out to me in interactions like this, meeting Rick so early on in your career and a Wall Street Journal piece that came out a couple of years ago about your personal board of directors. You've had these amazing mentors in your journey. Can you speak to the importance of them and the roles that they've played over the course of this decade-long career that you've had?
Yeah, I always go back to like this idea of team life, this idea that I had a team in my parents and honestly my dance teachers since I was very young. And I think understanding what it means to have a team, be a team, is something that you learn, and therefore you learn how to recruit people who are going to help you fulfill your dreams, right? And as I was building this company, I looked for people who I think believed in me, had more expertise in certain areas than I do. So there were people along the way that I think, whether that was like Anjula Acharya, who was an amazing, incredible, another South Asian role model, one of the first and only ones I knew at the time who was probably doing anything that wasn't in business and finance or engineering. Finding people like that who just spoke to me a bit deeper and who I think would give me advice through these different parts of my journey were really important. And then obviously more tactically, there was like Cyrus Masumi, who was the founder of ZocDoc, which was a very similar model to what I was building, but in the doctors and dentist space. It was about me finding people who could help me on my journey, whether that was like fundraising, introductions. For me, it really was about people I would connect to and I think were going to connect with me. And I think especially when I think to being a female founder who's been able to get through this space, like I was really thoughtful. And obviously, like, yes, I worked with incredible women, but I worked with incredible men too through this journey, whether that was Fritz Landman, who was one of my first investors and who became CEO of ClassPass. And I think I had to be that test and that examiner of, do you understand me? You know, and I think when I found people like that early on in my journey, I very much was like, please stay with me and please keep supporting me, because I knew I needed them to help me and they knew much more about the space than I did, but I also wanted them to let me lead. And I think even like when we made the CEO executive chairman decision, like Fritz is like, I want to help make your vision come to life. And I knew that, like, I wanted someone who was like, not going to be like, okay, you're out. Like, let me go and do this. Like, I have my own dreams. And I think it's really hard to find people like that who can understand what's going to make the best of the company, the best of your interaction together. And I think you have to be really thoughtful about that.
Yeah. I think that's super important, because sometimes there's just a haphazard approach of just find mentors. But I think understanding what you should look for.
Yeah, I think it's a really good point. I think people are always trying to check this box of mentors. You have to find people who are truly going to invest in you, right? And truly want to talk to you. And I think one thing I learned through my journey, and even when people come up to me, vice versa, it's people were really willing to be vulnerable on either side, because even Anjula and I, like, we're like sisters now. Like, we've gone from even just like business conversations to true friendship and true sisterhood. And I think that requires a little bit of vulnerability, because by the way, like, a mentor also wants to get something out of the relationship too, which means they want to feel like they can help you. And so if someone comes to me and is just kind of regurgitating all the things I've done in my life and ask me a question, which I know they could read on the internet, it just means less to me, because I'm like, okay, great. Like, I can tell you what I did. Great. You know, but if you come and like ask me something that I know you're like truly struggling with, that I truly feel like I can help you with, it just changes the conversation immediately for me to be like, wait, let me think about that and give you a deeper answer. And it just starts something very new. And I think a lot of the relationships in my life have been started in that very authentic way.
I think that's a really powerful sentiment, and one I'm definitely going to add to my toolkit when it comes to looking for mentors. Now, you spoke very briefly about this grander vision for ClassPass, and you once talked about how that vision was LifePass, offering these soul-nurturing experiences like cooking classes or massages. And now you have a book coming out by the same name. So can you speak a little bit about LifePass, both the vision and now the book?
Yeah. And I love that you know that connection, because it makes me so happy. But yeah, like, I always remember this conversation I always had with Fritz when we were talking about vision. And in the tech world, we say like N, meaning like state one. And then there's N plus one, which would be like the bigger one, and N plus two, which would be the bigger. N was this idea of ClassPass. N plus one was ActivePass. And N plus two was LifePass. And I had made this slide in like 2013 or 14. And it was always this idea of how we could continue to expand categories and types of experiences that are on the platform. And so, yeah, I mean, that journey has always been the North Star of that. And I felt as this journey for me was kind of coming to an end on that side of things, I really wanted to share with people all these tips and all these different methodologies that I feel like I've put into my life over this past decade, and honestly throughout my entire life, that has really helped me succeed. And I think one of the biggest things I learned is, and people always know this about me, is like, I don't let anything stand in my way. And I think that it comes down to whatever limits we perceive in our life, we're able to work through. And sometimes they are mental, like failure, expectations, identity, or sometimes they're real things like, I don't have money, I don't know the right people, do I have the skills? And through this book, I literally go through each one of those and how they affected my life and how readers themselves can work through them, because I don't want those to ever be constraints in people's lives that are going to make you not go after what you truly love in your life. And I think that has been the mantra of my life, is I just will create a plan or I'll find a way to work through it. We're always in places where Some of those things are not working for us. But if you literally put a plan together, if you look inward and prioritize, you can get to the other side and go after what you love. And I think that is the story of my life.
Wow. Well, I'm super looking forward to reading it. And I love the idea that it's a way of helping people pave their way forward while also understanding the journey that you had. I think if there's anything I've learned about the process of books in that world, it's just the best stories are informed by someone's lived experience. So really, really looking forward to that. I'm curious, beyond Life Pass, what's next for you?
Oh, these are such big questions. It's interesting because I am plotting out the next decade of my life, right? Like this last decade was so incredible. There's definitely things I'm super passionate about. I have my dance company, which is now national. Like I did a national audition at the beginning of last year and I have girls all around the US and they're just incredible. And I'm working on creating an Indian ballet to tour wow. the US and hopefully globally. So, and it's actually all about the resilience of Indian women, which is at the core of, I just feel like every part of who I am and who so many of us are. And so that's one thing that I'm really excited about. Obviously this book, which is keeping me busy. And then, yeah, I'm going to take some time to really figure it out. Yeah. Investing at this time as well. But, and I start with the book with this too, is sometimes you just got to like find the silence a little before you can really hear that calling that's going to push you through. And at the end of the day, I know that is what's going to pull and be the true north for me for the next decade or however long. The same way for me with ClassFest, it was this idea of giving people what dance was, right? In my life, it just was such a calling force for me that fueled so much. And I'm ready to find that next force and fuel for me as well.
Yeah. Well, super looking forward to seeing what you bring to the table next. It's been amazing to watch the past decade, but I know there's a lot more in store. There's one thing I was super curious about because I've heard you talk about it in a couple of forums, but can you talk to me about the number two and has it continued to manifest itself in your life in other ways?
So funny. So yes, I have an obsession with the number two. First of all, I was born on February 2nd. So I think that one is kind of obvious. But then over my life and before I met my husband and my baby, which I will tell you how their life is also connected to the number two, I wrote my MIT like college application essay on how my life revolved around the number two, whether that was the sense of duality. It was like, I'm the second daughter, all these things. Wow. I like really figured out like two was always my lucky number. My internet name on AOL was like pile 222. Like I was just very into the number two. And then I met my husband on my birthday, which was February 2nd.
Wow.
And then when I got pregnant and went to the doctor, my due date was February 2nd, which is crazy.
Is he born on February 2nd?
He was actually born a few days early. Okay. So he was born on January 29th. But it was just to me, like this idea of how so much of my life revolved around this number was incredible. And I'm really excited it's 2022 now because I feel like I've been waiting for this year my whole life.
Yeah, it's absolutely your year. That's awesome.
Yeah, and my book is launching in February of 2022. So it's 02-20. Yeah.
I'm getting the sense this was planned.
It actually was not because the book was supposed to come out last year.
So oh my gosh.
I don't know. I feel like there are synchronicities in the world and you just have to let it play out. Like you said, whether I planned it or someone else planned it, it was planned.
Well, luck seems to be on your side. The last question I have for you, and I might be asking this as much for myself as for our listeners, but what advice do you have for aspiring entrepreneurs who are just looking to get started?
You answer the question in your question, which is just get started. There wasn't anything I learned until I launched something and had it out there and had people truly give me feedback. Because up until then, it's just an idea. I think when you really can get people to transact with something, look at something, do something and hear them, that's when you'll actually be able to move forward.
Well, Bile, thank you so much for joining me on Trailblazers today. It's been so exciting, not just recounting your journey, but looking ahead to what comes next. And just know that you have a community out here really rooting for you. So thank you for taking the time.
Thank you so much for having me. This is a great conversation.
Thanks for joining us for today's episode. If you want to get new episodes straight to your inbox, subscribe to our newsletter at southasiantrailblazers.com and follow us at South Asian Trailblazers on Instagram, Facebook, and LinkedIn.